The Suédoise est très avancée.
And the Swedish attitude is a friendly one, but I can't hide that I'm very disappointed and all my compatriots are disappointed because after the decision of the Swedish Parliament in 2012, a decision to recognize the Arab Sahrawi Democratic Republic, what happened? The Swedish government didn't adopt that decision of the parliament. It never recognized the Sahrawi Republic after pressures from Morocco.
Ces faits ont endommagé l'image de la Suède.
And that was detrimental to the image of Sweden.
Et vraiment, c'est malheureux de
it's a pity
un pays
to see a democratic country like Sweden
cède à la volonté de
giving away to the pressure of an occupying power
au dépens de la victime qui sont les Sahraouis
and not supporting the victim, the Sahrawi people,
et qui n'a pas respecté
not caring about the law, not respecting the will of the Swedish people, because the parliament represents the voice of the Swedish people. And that was my message today.
That's Right Livelihood laureate, Sahrawi human rights leader Aminatou Haidar. She was celebrated Wednesday night for her decades of resistance against the Moroccan occupation of Western Sahara. And that does it for our show. DemocracyNow.org is here because of all of you. We thank you so much. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us from Stockholm, Sweden.
It is 5:01 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up is the evening news, but first, these messages.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard. Bridges and Cafe Catering is a restaurant and catering company located in Northeast Portland on the corner of MLK Jr. and Northeast Knott Street. Their kitchen is about 75% organic and open daily. Lunch was provided by Le Bistro Montage, located in Portland Industrial District at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. La Bistro Montage serves Creole cuisine, open daily until 2 a.m. Dinner was provided by Right Bayou Cajun Cuisine, a pop-up food cart located in the Portland area, providing a fusion of traditional New Orleans cuisine with fresh and local ingredients from the Northwest region. Find Right Bayou Cajun Cuisine at local Portland events. See their Facebook for more details. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now for your support.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Personnel Committee meeting has changed for the month of December and will meet Thursday, December 12th, 6 p.m. at
It is so important that all segments of our community have a voice and are represented. And KBOO does that, and they've been doing it for 51 years, and that's because of the support that the community gives it, which is an affirmation of its status and the need for it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, and air advisories in effect, how pollution is at the heart of it, and why people with some health conditions are at risk in Oregon and Washington over the next 24 hours.
They're taking to our streets to protest, here at home and throughout the world. Find out when and where tomorrow's climate strikers will be protesting in Portland, Vancouver, Beaverton, and Lake Oswego.
And remembering a legend. Friends, family, business leaders are among the thousands who gathered in Portland today to honor the legacy of former Columbia sportswear leader Gert Boyle.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 5th, 2019. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Jeffrey Wade.
And I'm Annette Newell. An airplane crashed this afternoon after clipping a fence and landing in a field at Grove Airfield in Camas. The plane's four passengers were not hurt. That crash happened right after 1 p.m. Reports stated that the pilot was heading west and overshot while coming in for a landing when the plane clipped a fence. The airplane had damage to the landing gear and propeller. Washington State Police and Washougal Fire Crew both rushed to the scene at 257th Avenue.
Thousands gathered at Veterans Memorial Coliseum today for a celebration of the life of Gert Boyle. Born in Germany, she and her family escaped from the Nazis and immigrated to America, building a life in Portland. She was a trailblazer nicknamed One Tough Mother, who led the Columbia Sportswear Company. She helped build it into an international brand. She died last month at the age of 95. Here are just a few of the thoughts of people who gathered to celebrate her life today, starting with her granddaughter, Annie Bainey, who puts her memories of Gert to music.
You are a soldier in sweatered armor. You can curse like a sailor and still get a Medal of Honor. You are amazing grace. You are amazing grace. You strength.
I will miss her dearly, as I'm sure you all will as well. I have a feeling she's watching this and no doubt will have something to say about it up there. Something like, shouldn't you all be getting back to work about right now?
When she surprised me with a $100 million gift for part of the Knight Cancer Challenge, she wanted it to be anonymous. Despite that, I gave Phil Knight a call because I figured he'd want to thank her. I got him on the phone and handed the phone to Gert. And in true Gert fashion, she picked up the phone and said, "Who is this? Phil? Phil who?" Then she went on to say that she just wanted him to know that the little old lady down the road had chipped in too. But the truth of the matter is, we never would have made the match without her generosity and that transformative gift. And thousands of lives will be saved because of her generosity.
That was Dr. Brian Druker, the director of the Knight Cancer Institute, talking about his memories of Gert Boyle at the celebration of the business pioneer who led Columbia Sportswear. She became a role model for women leaders and led a colorful, trailblazing life. Rest in peace, Gert Boyle.
A strong inversion is keeping polluted air near the ground, prompting an air stagnation advisor, which is in effect right now until 4 p.m. on Friday. Inversions keep cooler air trapped at the surface while warmer air sits higher. This advisory covers northwest Oregon, including Portland, Beaverton, Gresham, and also the central and south Willamette Valley and parts of southwest Washington. Poor air quality can create problems for people struggling with respiratory illnesses. Some counties could limit or ban burning in fireplaces or brush fires. The National Weather Service says rain is not going to show up to help with the air quality until late Friday.
Thousands of students and others plan to participate in a global climate strike this Friday across Arizona and around the world. Mark Richardson has the preview.
Young people around the world will be taking to the streets this Friday to take part in a strike to urge cities to take action on climate change. Rallies organized by the Global Youth Climate Strike are expected to draw thousands of students and their adult allies to local city halls to demand public officials act to fight the climate crisis. Zach Dennis is lead organizer for Arizona Youth Climate Strike. He says other than just showing up, they will make specific demands of local elected officials.
We want cities to declare climate emergencies and make climate action plans that are in line with the science on climate change. climate change is happening, and it's going to happen whether we like it or not. So we think cities should be prepared for it.
Dennis says he expects students and their adult allies, including workers, educators, scientists, and politicians, to be at his group's event. And he says the group has drawn support from hundreds of environmental and other groups, including Elders Climate Action, the Sierra Club, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and Physicians for Social Responsibility. Dennis says they're expecting a high turnout at strike locations. He says Arizona Youth Climate Strike is made up of mostly students who believe they're fighting for their future.
We don't have all the answers. We're just calling on our city to just listen to the science and take action where it's needed. Because honestly, right now, a lot of cities aren't doing anything and aren't even acknowledging that we have a problem.
Dennis says the groups plan to engage with state, local, and national candidates during the 2020 elections to encourage them to include climate change in their party's platforms. To find a climate strike rally near you, go to strikewithus.org and enter your zip code. For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
And there are four of these climate strikes planned for tomorrow in the Portland and Southwest Washington area. Portland's climate strike starts at 10:30 in the morning at Shemansky Park. Beaverton's climate strike is at 9 in the morning at the Blue and Red Max Line, Beaverton Central Station, and City Hall. Lake Oswego's climate strike starts a bit earlier at 8:30 in the morning at Lake Oswego City Hall. And across the bridge in Washington, Vancouver plans a climate strike Friday afternoon at 4 on the Vancouver waterfront. That's at 695 Waterfront Way.
Newly released documents in a lawsuit show leaders in the coal industry knew about climate impacts back in the 1960s. As Eric Galatas reports, coal executives wrote in 1966 that CO2 emissions could, quote, cause melting of the polar ice caps, which in turn would result in the inundation of many coastal cities, including New York and London, end quote.
As court proceedings continue against ExxonMobil on claims the company misled investors about the risks of climate change, a recently discovered journal suggests the coal industry also knew about the potentially catastrophic impacts of burning coal as early as 1966. Dr. Christopher Cherry, a University of Tennessee professor who found the industry journal, says he was surprised by how clearly executives understood how CO2 emissions were linked to climate change.
Talking about changes in temperature causing polar ice caps, inundation of cities like New York and London. In one paragraph, they basically summarized what we've been observing and what scientists have been describing was going to happen. But they did it back in the 60s, 50 years ago.
Also in the journal, an engineer from Peabody Coal pointed out that the industry was buying time until federal air pollution protections were introduced after the 1963 Clean Air Act. The first federal regulations for CO2 emissions from coal-fired power plants did not come until 2015 and were repealed in 2017. Peabody has responded to the findings, acknowledging fossil fuels' role in climate change and promising to advance technologies to reach its goal of near zero emissions. Cherry notes that just a few years ago, Peabody's position on climate change was denial and obfuscation.
At the end of the day, I don't hold a lot of hope or trust in a company that has been denying evidence of climate change for the last few decades, obviously, now almost half century.
Cherry wasn't researching coal complicity in climate change. He says he stopped a colleague carrying old library volumes to the recycling bin when he saw the 1966 Mining Congress Journal, mainly as a gift for his wife, whose parents were in the mining industry. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Galatas.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Sam Bowman and Yasmin Kobanoglu to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to KBOO and its Holiday Drive. KBOO is funded by our listeners, and we're asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member. I'm Sam, and I'm a volunteer here at KBOO. I work in the news department and do some music programming. I'm joined here by Yasmin.
Hi, I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu, and we know that your generous spirit always gets going during the holidays, so if you wouldn't mind supporting KBOO during this time, we're funded totally by listeners and by our volunteers' help, so if you could dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm or even come down to our station and talk with us. We'd love to get any donation from all of you for our holiday drive. Again, that number is 877-500-5266.
That's right, 877-500-5266. And by supporting KBOO, you're supporting Radio Relevant to Real People of Portland. And by supporting that, you are supporting those people. You give us the power to do good in the community. You keep this community alive with your membership and by supporting what matters to Portland.
And every dollar counts, and especially for our newsroom, we always try and give the community news that isn't heard on any other station, things from environmental issues to indigenous issues, even to talking about things that are going on locally. So if you wouldn't mind supporting our station by calling 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm, please support us during our holiday drive.
Yeah, we always make a point to cover local stories of interest and especially things that aren't being covered by the mainstream media. But we've also been known to put volunteers in some interesting places like Pakistan or Standing Rock. And you have, if you've been listening to the KBOO News over the years, you've probably been surprised by some of the reporting that we've been able to pull off on a budget that is entirely supported by you, by people who have listened to us say these things before and have called that number, 877-500-5266. Donate today.
The Oregon Department of Transportation's plans to advance a major highway project without a full environmental impact study is drawing attention. Critics say schools built next to highways pose serious health risks to students, including higher risks for asthma, heart disease, and cancer. They fear expanding I-5 in the Rose Quarter could make health risks worse for students at Harriet Tubman Middle School, where the air outside has already caused students to limit their playground time. About two-thirds of students at Harriet Tubman are students of color. ODOT is now considering approving the project as soon as this month. Portland Public Schools and other local agencies are pressuring ODOT to pump the brakes, and local students and activists are planning to hold a rally to oppose the project next Tuesday.
Businesses are unprepared for severe weather resulting from climate change. A new report says more intense storms and heavy flooding are putting people and businesses at risk. Nadia Rumlagan explains why.
Severe weather due to climate change is disrupting global supply chains and putting Michigan companies and the state's economy at risk, according to a new report. It says in the last 5 years, the state has experienced 11 climate or weather-related disasters that each topped $1 billion in damages. Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward, the nonprofit group that compiled the findings, says extreme weather has affected farmers, manufacturers, and other businesses across the state.
First, it's reasonable for people in Michigan to be looking around and saying, look, I believe in climate change, but can we afford to fix it? And what this report tries to do is show that we can't afford not to fix it.
The report says Michigan's infrastructure is particularly vulnerable to severe weather events. According to the American Society of Civil Engineers, the state has 140 high-hazard potential dams and more than 1,000 structurally deficient bridges. Doyle says severe weather will impact manufacturing companies, which rely on supply chains that span the globe, as well as local businesses.
It's also bad for small businesses who are less likely to survive severe weather losses. And one thing that people in Michigan really need to appreciate is for retailers, restaurants, the entertainment industries, bad weather, severe weather can be the difference between a good year and going out of business.
Doyle adds that lawmakers and investors could take simple steps to help buffer industries from some of the effects of climate change.
For one thing, Michigan should be using more renewable energy. Each year, Michigan imports $24 billion worth of coal, oil, and gas. That's a $24 billion buy local opportunity that could create a lot of jobs across the state.
The future of Michigan's $20 billion annual tourism industry is also at stake. The report notes that Mackinac Island, the Great Lakes region, and Detroit, the state's three major tourism destinations, are all susceptible to warming and worsening severe weather. For Public News Service, I'm Nadia Rumlagan.
The mother of a special needs boy is suing a Portland school district following a fall from his wheelchair. Devin Shigardis is triplegic, nonverbal, and suffers from cerebral palsy and a seizure disorder. He is also a student in David Douglas School District. In December of 2017, Devin fell from his wheelchair at Ron Russell Middle School when school staff did not strap him in properly. Sherry Shigardis, Devin's mother, was not notified of the fall for 3 days. Devin received fractures in both his leg and thigh as a result of the fall. Shigartis, oblivious to the incident, took her son to the doctor for x-rays when it became evident something was very wrong. Unable to tell anyone or express the course of events to his family, the boy suffered considerably until a doctor's confirmation prompted the school to come clean about the incident. Devin will have to undergo surgeries and physical therapy, but his family notes the biggest toll has been on his emotional health, as for 2 years later, he is still scared and distrusting. Sherry Shigartis is seeking $2.8 million, according to the lawsuit. She hopes this action will have a direct impact on how students' safety is handled, especially those who are nonverbal or with special needs. David Douglas School District told K2 they are unable to comment on the pending litigation at this time.
A new rule finalized this week from the U.S. Department of Agriculture could drop 688,000 people nationwide from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also called SNAP. KBOO's Althea Billings takes a look on the local impact.
The Trump administration's new rule tightening work restrictions for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is drawing strong criticism from hunger-fighting groups. The finalized U.S. Department of Agriculture rule undoes states' ability to issue waivers on the 3-month limit for SNAP benefits to people who aren't either working or in a training program for 20 hours a week. An estimated 688,000 people are expected to lose assistance because of the change. Oregon Food Bank CEO Susanna Morgan says she's horrified, noting SNAP serves 12 times more people than the state's food bank network.
As someone who was raised in the Quaker tradition, I find it extra appalling that this is happening in the holiday season, that we are taking food off the tables of our neighbors at the time when we are supposed to be at our very best selves and taking the very best care of our communities.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue points to the country's low unemployment rate and the goal of moving people towards self-sufficiency as the reason for the rule change. The agency estimates it will save the government $5.5 billion over the next 5 years. It's scheduled to go into place April 1st, 2020. The new rule affects able-bodied people 18 to 49 without dependents. Morgan says that about 24,000 Oregonians will be impacted, and the rule will result in $18 million in lost revenue to places such as grocery retailers and agricultural producers, largely in rural areas.
So, of course, we are most interested in most centering those 24,000 people who may be affected, but I also want to mention that this is a larger benefit to the rural economies as a whole that will also go away.
Morgan says the rule could be challenged in the courts. It's one of three rule changes the Trump administration has proposed to SNAP. According to a study from the Urban Institute this week, those rules taken together would drop 3.7 million people from the program nationwide. For KBOO Evening News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Althea Billings.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, so now it's your turn. Joining us now are Yasmin Kobanoglu and Sam Bowman to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Good evening. You're listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM here in the Portland area. It's our holiday drive, and we're funded completely by listeners and our volunteers' time, so we're asking you to go to your phones right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member by donating. Any donation would be great. Anything from $1 to $20 per month or even more would be amazing. Become a sustainer or make a one-time gift. You can do that by calling 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and give us your donation.
That's 877-500-5266, a.k.a. 877-500-KBOO. See what we did there. As Yasmin said, you can also go on to kboo.fm and become a member that way if you're not into the whole phone thing. If you are really into talking to people, you can come down to 20 Southeast 8th Street and meet us in person. You can become a member any of those three ways, and we highly recommend it. It costs tens of thousands of dollars to run this station just on the hardware level alone. And we know that nobody out there is, reaching that deeply into their pockets to give us tens of thousands of dollars. If you are, hi. 877-500-5266. But we know that most of you out there are, you know, giving us the what could amount to a cup of coffee every day for a week or something like that. It's the power of community and people coming together that helps make KBOO what it is. And join that community today by calling 877-500-5266.
And specifically for me and Sam in our newsroom for the evening news, we love to bring everyone coverage that you might not hear on any other station. And to keep that news coverage going, please support KBOO as much as you can. Even if that's not in a monetary way, please come down to our station and give your time. If you can donate financially, go to kboo.fm or go to 877-500-5266 and donate or become a member. Any donation would be helpful. Anything from $5 to $50. You can become a sustainer and you can make your gift now online or over the phone at kboo.fm or by calling 877-500-5266 and join us in our fight today.
Police arrested an Oregon City High School student Wednesday after they say he brought a gun, ammunition, and a knife to school with him. According to Oregon City Police, a resource officer was tipped off at the school that the 16-year-old student had a handgun in his waistband. He was identified, located in class, and detained peacefully. The student was arrested for unlawful possession of a firearm, disorderly conduct, and threat of harm. According to school officials, it remains unclear what his motives to bring those weapons were. No one was hurt in the incident, and no further reports of threats to other students or faculty were reported. The school did not go on lockdown because the detainment was quick, with few students even aware anything had happened. Classes resumed quickly following the arrest.
A new report says many young children in immigrant families are having a hard time in preschool, linking their fear and distress to the current political climate. As Susan Potter reports, it points the blame on federal anti-immigration policy, which it claims is hurting children.
1.3 million California children younger than age 5 may lose out on essential services because of a hostile immigration climate, according to a new report. Researchers from two children's advocacy groups found that the Trump administration's anti-immigrant policies and heightened law enforcement have had major impacts on children up to age 5. Andrea Lopez is with Para Los Niños, which runs Head Start child care centers in Los Angeles. She says families are dropping out of crucial programs for fear of being deported.
That's been the most heart-wrenching thing for us, is seeing their struggle and the fear that has been embedded in them.
Lopez says many families are refusing all forms of public assistance, even for their American citizen children, mistakenly believing that this would be held against them when applying for residency. President Donald Trump has said his policies are designed to reinforce the rule of law and save taxpayer dollars. Myra Alvarez is with the Children's Partnership, one of two nonprofits that co-authored the report. She says many kids are suffering, terrified that their parents won't be there when they get home from school.
The kids are becoming more aggressive. There's also greater separation anxiety, social withdrawal, being more stressed out as a result of this environment.
Patricia Lozano is with Early Edge California, which also co-authored the report. She encourages state policymakers to pass a law that declares preschools and daycare centers off limits to immigration officers, something already in place at K-12 schools in the state.
Early childhood programs should be safe places for families, and the providers and teachers need the support to provide the right resources to face this hostile environment.
California demonstrated its commitment to early childhood programs by allocating funds in the new state budget to train home visitors from the CalWORKS program on ways to blunt the impact of federal immigration policies and help families connect to needed services. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Residents of a low-income apartment complex in Portland got some good news Wednesday. Recent flooding at Oliver Station has resulted in concern about safety conditions during repairs. Apartment managers told residents they would not be responsible for paying rent between November 22nd and December 31st. In addition to the waiving of rent, some residents were also given hotel rooms. On November 22nd, a small fire within the complex set off the sprinkler system. Portland Fire and Rescue reported several apartments became soaked as a result of the sprinklers. The Lentz neighborhood complex has some residents angry over how management addressed the process of repairs, primarily about the safety concerns over the wet conditions and compromised spaces. Some say they just want to move and not be charged fees for breaking their leases. Landlord Dan Smith told renters Wednesday evening he had assurances from the building's insurance provider that rent would be waived.
In Tillamook, a fishing ban is in effect for Chinook salmon in the Wilson River due to a recent die-off of the fish. The ban is active throughout December from the Blind Slough area of the river to Jordan Creek. A recent press release from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, ODFW, reported over 200 dead fish were found last week alone, with many more suspected. Officials say the die-off is due to cryptobia, a parasitic infection. Lower water levels upstream are being blamed for the spread of the parasite, as adult Chinooks are in higher concentration downstream. As Chinook mortalities rise, the ban hopes to ensure the remaining population will be able to make it upstream to spawn, ensuring future generations of the species. Unaffected by this change and remains open under permanent regulations.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program. Just call this number, 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Rose City Native Radio coming up at 6 o'clock, and then at 7, it's From the Vault, where host Margaret Prescott interviewed American novelist, essayist, book editor, and college professor, the unforgettable Toni Morrison. The weather tonight, skies will be cloudy, down to a low of 43, and tomorrow those clouds continue with scattered showers moving in, a high of 50. And today in history, on this date in 1955, Edie Nixon and Rosa Parks led the Montgomery bus boycott. Our quote of the day comes from Rosa Parks, whom Congress named the First Lady of Civil Rights. She said, quote, "I have learned over the years that when one's mind is made up, this diminishes fear. Knowing what must be done does away with fear."
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now are Sam Bowman and Yasmin Kobanoglu to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to KBOO Portland. We're in the midst of our holiday membership drive. That means it's the holidays, and that means we are coming after you to become a member of this wonderful community radio station, become a member of this wonderful community by dialing 877-500-5266. No amount is too small. Even just $5 a month, well, that adds up to $60 a year. Wow, I'm so impressed by what you're about to do by giving us that and becoming a member of KBOO by dialing that number, 877-500-5266. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sam. We work together in the newsroom, and we try so hard to cover information and topics that you might not hear on any other station. And we can't do that without your help. So if you could go online to kboo.fm or call us at 877-500-5266, we have people here waiting for your phone calls, sitting by the phones right now, who are so excited to talk to you and tell you more about KBOO and how you can support us and share with you why it's important to support KBOO. We're one of the few community radio stations left on the West Coast. And by supporting KBOO, you're supporting radio that's relevant to the real people of Portland. You're giving us the power to do good in the community, and you're keeping our community alive with your membership and by supporting what matters. So if you can, please go to kboo.fm or call 877-500-5266. Any donation would be great. It doesn't matter if you think it's small. Trust me, to us, it's not. It all adds up. So again, please go to kbu.fm or call 877-500-5266 and join us in our fight today.
Yes, thank you, Yasmin. That's 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm. Once you've become a member, kick around the site for a little bit and see what sort of work people are doing here. Volunteers, community members just like you. And we all need your support. And the station needs your support as well. No amount is too small. No amount is too big. 877-500-5266. Thank you.
Former Vice President Joe Biden's on his no malarkey tour. This comes at the same time that the House Judiciary Committee has its first hearing with constitutional scholars about impeaching President Trump. Lily Volkey explains how these two events are related.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, resilient national Democratic frontrunner, is on an 8-day, 18-county, quote, no malarkey bus tour across Iowa.
The idea that they held up $400 million in aid while Ukrainians are being killed in the Donbass by Russian soldiers, killed, and he held them up, it is outrageous. Just to get a leader of a country to say something the leader wouldn't say.
In Washington, of the four constitutional scholars informing the House Judiciary Committee, three testified that Trump's efforts to pressure Ukraine are impeachable by historical standards. The one scholar called by Republicans, Jonathan Turley of George Washington University, criticized the case as, quote, slipshod and premature, unquote. It's an important moment for Biden in the Hawkeye state, as recent Iowa polls show Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders all ahead. But Iowa's 90% white, far from representative of the nation, says Andre Perry from the Brookings Institute.
So much of the attention from media and the candidates themselves are placed in the early states, so Iowa and New Hampshire. But those states really lack a key constituent that will be pivotal in a national election, and that's African Americans.
The most recent data has African Americans making up 20% of all Democratic voters. South Carolina is an early voting state whose Democratic voters are majority Black, and Biden polls at 44% among those voters. Perry thinks the three currently beating Biden in Iowa have better policy positions for the Black community, but Biden's association with Barack Obama and the time he's put in courting Black voters have given him a leg up.
Democrats are going to have to earn the Black vote. Mayor Pete is going to have to continue to go to Black communities and earn their vote and trust. He has a mountain to climb because he doesn't have a Barack Obama to be associated with right now, but he has to earn the vote, as do all the other candidates, Elizabeth Warren and other front runners.
This election cycle, Biden's trademark gaffes on debate stages and in front of crowds seem to cause more concern among some voters. Recently, The Atlantic published a piece on Biden's lifelong speech disorder saying, quote, maybe people would be more understanding if they knew he's still fighting a stutter. Jane Fraser, president of the Stuttering Foundation of America, says sometimes the inability to come up with the right word at a given moment is related to a stutter.
If word retrieval was part of what was affecting Mr. Biden throughout his life, it stands to reason that that might be part of what's worrying him now or what is slowing him down.
Fraser says that seeing a candidate and former vice president who stutters is inspiring.
Look, you know, there's a candidate to become president of the United States who stutters, so you can do whatever you want.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Volkey.
Oregon Democratic U.S. Senator Ron Wyden is sounding an alarm about former U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry's possible links to the Ukraine scandal that's embroiled the president. Here's part of what he told the U.S. Senate about his concerns about Perry and his replacement.
Mr. Rick Perry was the Energy Secretary, has refused to comply with the subpoena to testify about his involvement in the Trump-Ukraine scheme. Acting Secretary Dan Briette, nominated to replace Mr. Perry, has failed to provide substantive answers to key questions about Mr. Perry's dealings with the Ukrainian state-owned energy company Naftogaz. Since I have been raising questions on this matter, Naftogaz executives have reportedly been coming forward to cooperate in a federal investigation into the Ukraine scheme. Mr. Perry has virtually skipped town leaving his job after insisting for months that he was determined to stay, while the Ukraine scheme is front and center in the House impeachment inquiry. And Madam President, now with the vote on Mr. Perry's replacement, the Senate is truly in the dark, lacking answers to important questions. Those questions include issues pertaining to Mr. Perry's role in a campaign to change the leadership of NaftaGas, questions about what Mr. Perry, his donors, and certain crooked associates of Rudy Giuliani stood to gain from those changes, questions about Mr. Perry's role in the Ukraine scheme, which Trump administration officials have admitted was about withholding critical military aid in a face-to-face meeting until the Ukrainian president agreed to do Donald Trump what he described as a political favor. These are serious issues closely tied to ongoing investigations. This goes way, way beyond the well-documented waste that we often see in the Trump cabinet: private jets, soundproof booths, $30,000 desks. This is about the administration using its full might to push a foreign leader into helping Donald Trump's reelection campaign.
That's Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden talking about his concerns about the allegations at the heart of the impeachment inquiry into President Trump and possible links to former Energy Secretary Rick Perry. Despite Wyden's concerns, the Senate confirmed Dan Brouillette to lead the Energy Department this week, succeeding Rick Perry.
Scientists say reducing mercury emissions can also help to cut down on sulfur dioxide and air pollution particles. But as Andrea Sears reports now, economists are finding some major flaws in the Trump administration's plan to change EPA mercury rules.
A new report says the Trump administration's proposal to weaken rules for emissions of mercury and other toxic substances is based on a faulty economic analysis. The report from the External Environmental Economics Advisory Committee says the cost-benefit analysis used to justify the rule change is based on outdated data, didn't use the best available science, and underestimates the benefits of the current rule while overestimating its costs. According to report co-author Joe Aldi, it ignores the public health benefits associated with cutting mercury emissions, such as reducing the risk of heart attacks.
Some of this recent research suggests that the impact there may be on the order of billions of dollars a year in terms of the public health benefits of reducing those heart attacks if we reduce people's exposure to mercury.
The EPA's analysis says the Obama-era rule saves only $6 million a year. The agency is expected to issue a final rule by the end of this year. Aldi points out that one reason the EPA's estimate of health benefits from the mercury rule is so low is that it eliminates the effect of reduced particulate and sulfur dioxide emissions, which are reduced when mercury emissions are cut.
That's a large category of benefits that's estimated by EPA in their initial analysis in 2011 of up to $90 billion of public health benefits per year.
The EPA says it's not doing away with the mercury rule, but the Trump administration is expected to overturn the finding that regulating power plant emissions is appropriate and necessary. Aldi notes that throwing out that finding would eliminate the legal basis for having the rule at all.
Doing so creates potentially some legal risk and begs the question, if these regulations are no longer justified, according to EPA, it's hard to continue them as compliance obligations on coal-fired power plants across the country.
He adds that even power plant operators who have invested in equipment to reduce mercury emissions are opposed to weakening the mercury rule. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
A California police department released body camera video Wednesday evening showing the shooting and killing of a 15-year-old boy by one of its officers. In August of 2018, Ceres police officer Ross Bays unloaded his entire magazine on 15-year-old Carmen Mendez as the teen ran into an orchard. No verbal commands or warnings were issued by the officer. The video release follows a $2.1 million settlement with the victim's family. According to Stanislaus County Sheriff's officials, Bays was responding to reports of someone brandishing a weapon at a local skate park. He began pursuit of a black Lexus that had been reported involved in a hit-and-run at the skate park. The car stopped just east of Ceres, with Mendez vacating the car and fleeing towards a nearby orchard before being shot by Bays. Three other juveniles in the car were detained following the shooting. Several guns were reported to be found in the vehicle as well. It remains unclear if Mendez was the individual who pulled out a gun at the skate park. The Ceres Police Department has declined comment, saying the case is still under review by the district attorney's office.
We don't fill up your newscast with ads, but we do need your support to keep this local newscast coming to your airwaves and web stream. Joining us now are Yasmin Kobanoglu and Sam Bowman to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
You're listening to KBOO, and we're in the middle of our holiday drive right now. Our membership drives are some of the most important times during the year for us, since KBOO is funded completely by our listeners and volunteers. So we're asking you to go to your phones right now or your computers and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member. Any donation would be helpful, anything from $1 to $10. Nothing is too small. It all adds up, and we can use all the help that we can get. You keep this community alive with your donations and your membership by supporting what matters. So please support KBOO Community Radio by going to kboo.fm or calling 877-500-5266 toll-free to join the fight today.
That's right, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm and click on the donate jar. Now, talent is universal, opportunity is not, and with your help, we can break down the barriers many people experience to making media that their community can hear. And KBOO is really a unique experience to get involved with. We have our feet on the ground and our head in the clouds, and that means that we're there at the picket lines, in your shops that are organizing, in, you know, protests down at all across the city. Any effort that people are making to improve their lives, and we also give people space to envision a future that is different from what we are experiencing today. And you can help support all of the above and a whole bunch of really good music by calling 877-500-5266. Go to kboo.fm, come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Street, make your pledge, and become a member today.
By supporting KBOO, you're supporting radio that's relevant to the community around you here in Portland. And even if you can't donate in a monetary way, please volunteer your time, come on down to KBOO, meet with us, talk with us, and support KBOO in any way that you can. Specifically, during our holiday membership drive, we're asking for you to go online or call us to donate. You can do that going to kboo.fm or by calling 877-500-5266 and join the fight today.
Yes, that's 877-500-5266 or 877-500-KBOO or go to kboo.fm and click on the donate jar. Become a member today.
Wanting warmer weather? How about a toasty 2 million degrees Fahrenheit? These are the temperatures outside of NASA's Parker Solar Probe, whose initial completion of close passes to the center of our solar system yielded its first results this week. The satellite was launched in August of 2018 with the goal of helping understand fundamental questions about the Sun by being able to orbit it at a much closer range than any satellite before. Data collected from Parker are helping reveal patterns in solar wind and documenting the blazing heat of the corona, or the outer layer of the Sun. Helping understand patterns in solar emissions would enable better predictability of space weather. Parker has also provided insight to the occurrences of solar ejections of mass from the corona, which could impact the global power grid and telecommunications on Earth, as well as our astronauts on the International Space Station. Over the course of its 7-year mission, the probe's orbit will shrink, bringing it closer and closer to the Sun over the course of 21 approaches.
A federal Interior Department advisory committee has suggested that the National Park Service privatize some campgrounds. But Eric Tegedoff reports some groups are fighting back against any plan to privatize our national parks.
The disbanding of an Interior Department advisory committee last month quieted some of the talk on privatizing features of national parks. But Jason O'Neill with Western Values Project, a Montana-based public lands watchdog group, says that was the beginning of plans to monetize some of the country's most iconic sites. The Outdoor Recreation Advisory Committee, or as it was commonly known, the Made in America Committee, recommended privatizing campgrounds, offering Wi-Fi, inviting food trucks, and more to national parks in late September, and faced immediate criticism. O'Neill says after its proposal, the committee had served its purpose, and so there was no harm in breaking it up.
They've already recommended a proposal that has been widely controversial, and they've seen a lot of backlash for. So, hey, we got the recommendations. Let's disband the committee, quell the fears, but then not tell anybody what this quote-unquote robust modernization plan is.
The National Park Service says it has yet to take action on the committee's recommendations, although O'Neill notes that the agency hasn't rejected them either. National parks face a maintenance backlog of $12 billion. The Trump administration says modernizing the parks with private sector help can address infrastructure issues. O'Neill says the Made in America committee was packed with industry concessionaires that currently profit off of national parks. At least three members were flagged by the Interior Department as having potential conflicts of interest. O'Neill says more concerning is that these plans are being made without public involvement.
It should be done in the public, not behind closed doors, with input from all users to see really how we think and Americans think our national parks should be in the future. Should they look more like amusement parks, or like they traditionally have?
O'Neill adds that this fits in with the Trump administration's overall public lands inclinations.
All groups that care about our national parks and public land groups are being very diligent because there's a concerning trend here under the Trump administration that they want to monetize and privatize public assets across the board.
For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A transgender student's fight over school bathrooms comes before a federal appeals court today in Atlanta. The 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will hear arguments regarding whether a Florida school district should be ordered to allow students to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity. The 11th Circuit could become the first federal appeals court to bring a binding statement on this issue. The ruling would cover schools in Florida, Alabama, and Georgia, and could carry the issue to the U.S. Supreme Court. Drew Adams, a now graduate of Nice High School in Ponte Vedra, won a lower court ruling last year ordering St. John's County School District to allow him to use the boys' restroom. Adams transitioned from female to male before starting his freshman year at the school. The school district appealed, arguing that it will permit transgender students to use single-occupancy, gender-neutral bathrooms. Adams, now a student at the University of Central Florida, told the Associated Press on Tuesday that he was hopeful and that, quote, "I really think it's going to take the courts to change it," end quote. You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Jeffrey Wade, Althea Billings, Lily Bulkley, and Eric Tegedoff. The producer is Annette Newell. Special thanks to Sam Bowman and Yasmin Kobanoglu. Our engineer is Ted Jones. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jeffrey Wade.
And I'm Annette Newell. Coming up tomorrow morning at KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's A Journey of Truth Radio with Margaret Pest Prescott. At 9, Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. At 10, it's Film at 11, discussing great unorthodox holiday movies and screen celebrities who have passed away this season. Then at 11, Pacific Underground, the show by and for Asian and Pacific Islander communities. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by our member support, so if you would like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
Coming up next is Rose City Native Radio, but first we go to Yasmin Kobanoglu and Sam Bowman to talk about supporting people-powered community radio, the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to KBOO and to our holiday membership drive for 2019. KBOO is funded by our listeners, and we are asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266. What's that? I'll say it again, 877-500-5266. You can also go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. Whatever you do, become a member of KBOO, because here is a unique resource for Portlanders that has been around for over 50 years now, and I know a lot of people who listen to KBOO. I don't think I know one person who likes everything they hear on KBOO, but everybody has something that they only hear on KBOO and nowhere else. And you can help support that kind of resource for our community and resource of media making for people with something to say by dialing 877-500-5266. Talk to one of our friendly volunteers and become a member right now.
And every time you donate, you're letting your voice be heard in saying that you support KBOO and the voices and content that we promote. These voices deserve to be heard, and thank you for allowing us to amplify the voices from your community. Support KBOO, do your part, because by supporting KBOO, you're supporting radio that's relevant to our community in Portland. You're giving us the power to do good in the community and keep giving you content that you want to hear. You keep this community alive with your membership and by supporting what matters. So make your contribution. It can be $1, $10, $100 would be amazing. Become a sustainer by making gifts every month. You can go to kboo.fm or call 877-500-5266 and support KBOO, your community radio station.
Yes, every dollar matters. And if you give the mic to the people with your support, a contribution of $10 or even just $5 a month, that makes a huge difference. So here's the number to call, 877-500-5266. You can also go on kboo.fm. If it's 20 years ago, or never mind.
If it's 20 years ago, bring out your typewriters, type something up, put it in a mailbox. We'll get that somehow. Just, every dollar counts.
Yeah, just pick up the phone and tell the operator, get me 877-500-5266, or put me on that internet, kboo.fm. Click on the donate button. Join us.
Every dollar matters. Every donation counts. Please support KBOO and support radio that's relevant to the real people of Portland.
Join the fight today, 877-500-5266.
877-500-5266.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard. Bridges and Cafe Catering is a restaurant and catering company located in Northeast Portland on the corner of MLK Jr. and Northeast Knott Street. Their kitchen is about 75% organic and open daily. Lunch was provided by Le Bistro Montage, located in Portland Industrial District at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. La Bistro Montage serves Creole cuisine, open daily until 2 a.m. Dinner was provided by Wright Bayou Cajun Cuisine, a pop-up food cart located in the Portland area, providing a fusion of traditional New Orleans cuisine with fresh and local ingredients from the Northwest region. Find Wright Bayou Cajun Cuisine at local Portland events. See their Facebook for more details. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now for your support.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-2000. 8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
I think KABU is important because it provides a platform for me to talk about Palestine, which is really not talked about in mainstream media. KABU is different from other media because it is community-based. So we have people of all different colors and backgrounds coming in and working together to create this really safe space. Support KABU and Palestine Hurrah!
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KABU Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at KABU.FM. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KABU Community Radio.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us an Indian first then?
Hello, hello. You're listening to Rose City Native Radio. I'm your host, Jack Malmstrom. We got a great show for you today. Music, poetry, and more. DJ Yellow Horse is in the building. So much fun stuff for you today, Indian Country. We're going to start off the show. We're going to try and get some energy into this cold winter season here. Starting off the show, this is Chief Rock with Sacred Gift Song. Here on KBOO Portland, Rose City Native Radio.